Your support for Out to Lunch Acadiana is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base, JonesWalker.com. Support also comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette.
From Cafe Vermilionville in Lafayette, we're out to lunch with Professor of Finance and Director of the award-winning Birken Road Reports, Peter Ricciuti. It's business, Acadiana style.
Hi, I'm Aileen Bennett, sitting in today for Peter Ricciuti. Welcome to Out to Lunch. We often hear people lamenting, mostly politicians, that manufacturing in America has hit an all-time low. The catch cry you hear frequently repeated is, we don't make anything here anymore. Here in Acadiana, we know that's not true. We make pretty much everything. Today, I want to introduce you to a couple of people who make things. Alison Ball DeHart and Peter DeHart at their company Make Made. The wide range of stuff they make includes websites, photographs, movies, children's toys. The company is 5 years old, but Alison and Peter have been working together every day for 10 years, and they're still married. Peter and Alison, congratulations and welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
Normally, you expect a company to be a film production company or a toy manufacturing company or a website development company or a graphic design company. Does MakeMade make all of these various products because Lafayette is a small enough market and there's not enough business to allow you to specialize in any one of these? Or do you both just have a lot of skills and like to use them all?
I think it's more of the second. I know ever since I was a young kid, I'm just interested in kind of all creativity. And I've never really seen creativity as something like you put in a box and I'm only this type of designer. I think there's like certain rules as designers and artists, composition, color, all those things that can translate over many different formats. And I think that in meeting Alison 10 years ago, I feel like I found somebody else who aligned, our vision aligned that way. And so I never really saw us as a filmmaker. And I guess once I had met you, I knew you did film and you were a photographer, but then you were sketching and we started doing more graphic design and then we were playing music. So it's like...
Yeah, to me, it's like we think of it more of like a creative problem. So there's a creative problem that needs to be solved. And what are the tools that we can develop over time in our toolbox to use and apply to any project? So, you know, like if you are someone needs to be more visible in the community and they feel like websites is the best solution to it, then okay, we'll learn how to do a website. But also maybe you need photos on that website and you also maybe need to do like a large scale graphic design installation, and that's a good problem solver. So just like what are the tools you develop over time that help you and other people get the word out about their mission, I guess.
And I think we've said time and time again that we realized that with Alison studying film in college and I studied industrial design in college, both of them are actually kind of similar in a lot of ways. And then there's especially documentary filmmaking, because there's a lot of research, and then there's a lot that goes into production. And I think industrial design is heavily weighed on research and figuring out who you're designing for and why you're designing a certain way. And then, of course, moving into the design phase and producing it and trying to get it out there. And then I think documentaries are the same way. So I feel like we kind of learned two creative trades that overlap a lot. A lot of people would see them as very different, but I don't see them as that different.
And a lot of people are true artists in the sense that they're really not interested in the business side of anything. And like when I think of a true artist, I think of that... And I don't want to say we're not true artists, but we're very interested in the business side of things as far as, like, how can you be efficient in your workday and how can you, help get a client what they need on time with a deadline. And, like, we like to please people as well as make things. So the two together for us, I think, is more exciting, still dealing with clients and then making work for ourselves. I think if we just made work for clients and not for ourselves, it would be less thrilling. But because we do both, there's still a connection to the community and a connection to the making of things.
How do your creative processes, how are they the same and how are they different?
It seems like every project is just different. I don't you know, I mean, it could be, obviously, being creative or being an artist or designer, you get inspired by something, and that might change your process a little bit on a particular project. I feel we don't really have a set, I feel like, machine that, like, you come to us and, like, we're going to run you through this machine, or, you know, and not just necessarily the client, but even just us. Like, I don't have to, I don't feel like I go to, like, some special place to do all of my brainstorming, you know. So I think it kind of happens differently every time, and that's probably just looking for different ways to try to figure out something different, you know. So
yeah,
I'm trying to think. I wouldn't say
I would
that
say we do a lot of, like, organizing to have moments of freedom. Like, we do a lot of pre-planning, a lot of, like, setting things in order, putting structure on ourselves to be able to, like, sit and think and be creative without the, like, crushing fear of failure.
Yes. So most people would shy away from working with their spouse. What's the secret?
We never really think about it, you know? Yeah. Like, it's just, I don't know. We have a lot of people that say, like, oh, God, I can never do that. And it's just, I feel like because we're so work obsessed, we would never see each other if we didn't work together. And a lot of, like, conversations about work, or, like, as we're falling asleep at night, it's like, oh, have you thought about this idea? Or, you know, and so it's not really during certain hours. It's more just like a always progressing and thinking.
Right.
All the time.
I would agree. And I mean, I think, Aileen, you would know this firsthand as well. It's like, I think when you are a person in this field, you can't shut it off. You can try to shut it off, but I don't think you can shut it off. And I think that there's a lot of jobs out there, and there's a lot of people who are, you know, they're just itching to get to that 5 o'clock, and they can clock out, and they don't have to take anything home with them, and they don't really care. And that's of course fine. They might care about their job when they're at it, but ideas come at 11 o'clock at night when you're binge watching shows on TV. They come early in the morning. They come at lunches. You know, it's like they come during quote unquote office hours. They come while you're on vacation. I feel like most of the bigger ideas we've had or worked on haven't come during office hours, you know?
Yeah. So you're always working on a vast range of projects, and, you know, I follow you on social media, and we have little hints of what you're doing. What's the most exciting thing you're working on at the moment?
I would say the most exciting thing that we're working on is a documentary about the artist Robert Wiggs. When we came to him, he was a sculptor of the age of 92, and we had seen his retrospective at the Cadiana Center for the Arts, and were really drawn to his work and didn't quite understand the world of it, but we were intrigued, and we met in a casual conversation at the Southern Screen Film Festival. We met Lisa Osborne, who's also a sculptor. And you have a lot of times people come up to you and say, oh, you should do a documentary on this.
And it's always something that shouldn't
not
be a
always,
documentary.
Not always. Yeah.
But most of the time it's like my, you know, like I always say, it's like, you need to do a documentary on my cousin who kills rats for a living. He's like, he has some interesting stories. And so he has interesting stories, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know. I don't know if I can invest that time right now. But this was like one of the first projects where somebody...
And she was like, you should do a documentary on Robert and Betty Wiggs. And we were like, yes, do you know them? Could you connect us? And so she connected us and helped us kind of get started on it. And then we spent 2 days with him and Betty at their home. And this was...
Three years ago.
At the time. And then soon after... things kind of changed in their lives, and she passed away, and we went back and filmed again with him, and then he got moved into a nursing home, and then eventually he passed away, and so we, once all of that happened, we kind of had to, like, sit and regroup and figure out, understand his work more, and the world and his thought process, and then kind of reimagine how we would tell the story now that we have all that knowledge and that understanding of his work. And
we were thrown into it rather quickly.
Yeah.
I don't think we knew what we were. We knew what we were doing, but we didn't know what we'd get out of it when we first started. Because I think when we went there to spend 2 days, maybe in our heads we were thinking we might just make a 10-minute video about a day with this interesting aging sculptor who continues to work day in and day out. And then I think it just, like Allison said, it just evolved from there. And so now I feel like I understand it. I still don't fully understand it because it's kind of high concept art, and it overlaps into science. He's made a scientific discovery through his art just because of basically viewing the world slightly differently and drawing. And he's made one scientific discovery, and he should be in the company of some other great scientists, but he's kind of unknown about, which is kind of sad. But the problem is he was an artist. He wasn't a scientist. And so he didn't have the right colleagues to help publish his work. He wasn't being recognized he was still at some point being recognized by the science community, but most of the time he was still just a man with an art degree. He was an artist. So
it's hard to know with you guys what to talk about next because you do so many things, but I kind of have a crush on your toys. tell me about them. How did they come about? How did their names come about? And describe them to our audience.
Well, when I first met Peter, I knew that he did product design, and then as I got to know him, he was like, what I really want to do with my life is make toys. And I was like, okay, interesting. And then he revealed, I have, 500 action figures, 500 plus action figures.
And you still married him.
Probably plus, yeah.
I'm always we need to build room for these action figures.
Yeah. So James Vanway and I are going to open a museum.
Yeah. And he has a interesting way of looking at the world in the sense that it's like the other day we were at a restaurant and he had picked up the cup and was looking at the bottom of it to see what type of plastic it was made from, just to see what it was made of. And the waitress came up and was like, is there something wrong with your water? He's like, no, I'm just looking at my glass and seeing, the manufacturing type of plastic it is. And then he's always really interested in how things, fit together and what's the mechanism that turns it. And so from my understanding, you've always wanted to make toys. And but the idea of making toys on a large mass manufacturing scale is kind of depressing when you think about the idea of adding to the world of stuff that already exists. So we are starting small with, small batches and small toys for the idea of getting a little more complicated with the mechanisms and
treating them a little bit more like fine art. There's only certain batches that are made. Think of it like making prints. So hopefully that they're more special and they're not completely mass-produced to where, like Allison said, they just end up in everywhere and then end up nowhere.
Add to the throwaway culture of all of it. But so we have two toys, Simon the elephant and Birchman the bear. And
I'm going to ask where their names came from.
So Simon, when Allison was working for the university, she was working for
Cinematic Arts at the time.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's true. And Charles Richard, who was
my boss.
Yeah, your boss. He had a little boy named Simon who was just this curious little boy, amazing, hyper intelligent.
Yeah. Just inspiring, with the way he looked at the world.
Mm-hmm. So it was he probably inspired us. So it was an honor, I guess, of him.
Yeah. And he's 13 now.
Yeah, he's 13 now, so. And then Birchman, it's my middle name.
Yeah.
So it was my grandfather's name, so.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Aileen Bennett, sitting in for Peter Ricciuti. I'm talking with Alison Bowe DeHart and Peter DeHart from a creative manufacturing company called MakeMade. Peter, what toys are next?
There's a gator that we're hoping to get out this year, and the gator's name is Chloe. And I'm trying to think where that name came from. I think we ended up just liking.
Yeah, we did a lot of brainstorming on it, and we knew we wanted to add a female to the mix. and we... Maybe we'll meet a Chloe. one day.
Maybe.
And they won't like that.
It just seemed like such a great French name for an alligator.
Yeah.
A more distinguished alligator.
And how do you test your toys? Do you have a group of kids that come and play with them? Do you?
We do safety testing. So you do, like, you send it off to a factory to get certified. So they do, like, a, you know, a...
they do physical testing, and they test all your inks and all your finishes and
to make
packaging
sure
and stuff
all,
like that.
Safe. Because technically, even if you're a small batch, you should be going through that process because you're still responsible if something happens.
Yeah, in 2000, I think it was 2008, the... like the safety commission, they started making it really hard for small manufacturers to just make toys and make any product for any child under the age of 12. I mean, anything, like if you have a t-shirt company and you print on kids' shirts and those shirts are intended for 12 and under, like, you should be testing all of your inks every year. And most people who are just printing t-shirts, you know, you're not even thinking about it. And I guess they're not... I guess it's like an audit. You could get questioned by the government. You could get shut down. But since then, since 2008, there's been all these groups that have kind of come together, and now they even, I guess, the CPSC has a commissioner that only deals with small batch manufacturers, and they're there to help kind of hold your hand and help you get through this. And then certain things they allow you, because the testing is not cheap, and it's easy for these big manufacturers to do it because they're going to make millions and millions and millions of one product to stock shelves. But when you're, you know, just a craftsman in your workshop making one-of-a-kind toys, it definitely becomes a lot harder. So, but since we've learned, I guess, all of that information and tried to navigate that, and that's sort of this whole other world that I think most people would probably give up after they go to the government website. And you have to have all these documents of all the regulations that, I mean, it's pretty involved. But it has to be done. And I'm glad it's there, because with the rise of Etsy and people just making those things, I mean, you could be getting stuff that's absolutely terrible for your children or even for just anybody. So it's good that it's in place, but it does make it a lot harder. And it kind of, for a smaller company for us, like, too, it slows the process down. Because you got to send it off for testing, wait for the testing results, you know, of course, make changes, get your documents in order. So
as well as art design, filmmaking, toy making, and all the other things you do, you also are both in a remarkable number of bands. Can you name the bands you're currently in?
I need a piece of paper.
No, it's really not that much.
No, it's not.
He's been in Brassbed for 11 years, 10 years.
This is the 11th year.
Yeah. And it's kind of how we met. Like, I used to go to their shows, and then maybe 4 years later, we started Carbon Poppies. And I had always been writing songs and, like, not showing anyone. Those songs I've turned into releasing through a band that I lead, basically, called Kind Cousin. And he worked with me on that record. So Carbon Poppies, Johnny Campos is also in the band. So there's three of us. And then Brassbed is Johnny Campos and Christian Mater.
Right. And then Kind Cousin is?
A rotating cast of collaborators, what I like to say.
So it's a question I know you're asked a lot. Lafayette, do you plan to stay or leave?
I grew up here, so I think it's a really special place. My first friend that I made when I got here was Johnny Campos. And so,
when we... When you were seven.
Yeah, when we were seven, yeah. So then, and then those same friends that I made when I was seven, I still have now. Like, this place, it has the best people, for sure. And I think that's the hardest reason not to leave. I think Lafayette has so much potential of what could happen. I know you know this as well. I mean, it's just so much stuff that could happen, and it fights itself a lot of times. But in the end, there's so much room for change and growth here. It's like, we always feel like if we go to another city who's already kind of in the middle of that or in the tail end of that, you're not really going to be contributing as much to hopefully shaping a city. So, and I think that that sounds more intriguing.
Yeah, we like a good project. And it feels like there's room for growth and improvement. And I think if you, we have a connection to the community, and we feel like, you know, if maybe we're more beneficial here in a way, then we wouldn't be the same in Portland, you know?
And I would say also, I mean, I've been saying this for years, but because we have like fiber internet which is like,
it's majorly helpful.
It is. Right. Like our office is at the house, and to have that at our house that fast and then those capabilities, it's like, where do we really need to be? You know, we can communicate, upload, I mean, do anything that we need to do, and we can travel any place to do work. So it's really, I think in this day and age, I don't think you necessarily have to be in those major cities anymore, unless you want to be.
I don't think Lafayette would let you guys leave anyway, so...
We need a retainer in maybe.
I think we could arrange that. Alison and Peter, this is part of the show we call Your Brother-in-Law. You're wrapping up a long day of work, and you're finally going to get a few minutes to yourself when your phone rings. It's your brother-in-law. Usually, he only calls when he's got a computer problem, but this time, the conversation's a little different. Peter and Alison, your brother-in-law has a great idea that's going to make you all a fortune. You're already making kids' toys and films, and he's got a killer concept for a film where the main character is a kid's toy. It's kind of like Toy Story, but it's got a Cajun theme. The franchise is called Pierrot Pete. The first movie is Pierrot Pete in Paris. It's about a kid called Pete and his buddy, Bodan, who's a sausage. Pete and Bodan fall asleep on the bayou in Pete's pirogue and wake up in Paris. Your brother-in-law is prepared to quit his job in sales at the Wyndham Garden Hotel to make this happen, if you guys will bankroll him for a couple of months. What do you say? Do you want to get into the kids' film business?
I say, are you ready to commit 4 years of your life to this?
That's exactly what I would say, too.
That's usually what we say to people when they call and give us a concept.
Yeah, anything most of the time related to a film. When somebody says, I want to make a film, like something feature-length, that's the first thing. It's like, are you ready for 4 years? Because that's what it's going to be. And I mean, we even said when we started working on this Robert Wiggs documentary, it's like, I don't know why I thought that wouldn't apply. Like somehow for people we do films and video work for, it's the 4 year thing. But no, we can do it in less time. And we filmed 3 years ago. We're wrapping up hopefully this year. And here we are, 4 years.
I feel like our answer was too serious, though. Okay. She just gave us a joke, and we went really straight with it.
But I think...
Well, and I guess, like, you, as creative problem solvers, the first thing you hear is, like, okay, I start thinking, like, well, what's the best format for this idea that you have? Like, it sounds like you... it sounds like it would have to be an animation, because you're making sausage move. You know, like, is it stop motion? Is it... is it... hand-drawn animation, like, you might start needing to, like, go on YouTube and learn about all this kind of stuff. And
we can quickly talk people out of ideas.
Yeah. or let them know how long something like that might take, like a normal timeline of that. And then also you talk about, like, funding. And so say you're going to quit your job. How much do you need to stay afloat? And why do you think this idea will be the idea that sets you apart from everybody else? I feel like I'm still
That's
answering
still
very
serious.
Seriously.
I feel like, well, I'd have to be serious if he's about to quit his job.
Yeah. I feel like it's a common thing that my brothers would call and say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think this is...
Especially a YouTube series. They're always like, you guys should make your life into a YouTube series. Like, we're... Yeah, but...
Yes. So,
with all that time,
what's the dream for the future?
Our goal is not, like, a lot of people, I guess, in business think, like, oh, well, one day I'm going to have a big place and I'm going to have 10 people under me and I'm going to wake up and tell them what to do every day. And for a managerial position, and for us, I don't know what's wrong with us, but it just doesn't sound exciting. So we're just trying to figure out how to stay two people and be efficient and be able to take on a good amount of work and cover our bills and cover our, you know, future retirement and all that kind of stuff and still be able to make art.
Yeah. Be balanced and be healthy.
And yeah.
To me, that's all you can really, really, really hope to be.
Allison and Peter, you are great examples of Louisiana ingenuity and creativity. It's been really good to spend time with you. Thank you both for taking the time to join me today on Out to Lunch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My guests on Out to Lunch today have been Allison Ball DeHart and Peter DeHart, co-owners of Make Made. You can find out more about Allison and Peter's various creations by following the links on our websites, krvs.org and itsacadiana.com. Today's show is recorded live over lunch at Café Vermilionville in Lafayette. Café V is open Monday to Friday for lunch and six nights a week for dinner, with a courtyard that sets the scene for fine Louisiana cuisine. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Our researcher is Anne Christian. Our theme song, Encore Monsieur Nice Guy, is written by Mitch Foreman and performed by Mitch Foreman and Andre Michaud. Our Acadiana business consultants are Pete Prados from Innovate Acadiana, Zach Barker from The Opportunity Machine, and Dr. Blake Escaday. If you want to know what we all look like, you can find photos from this show on our website and Facebook page. You can get this show as a podcast, you can listen to past shows, and you can keep up with us on all kinds of social media by going to our websites, itsacadiana.com and krvs.org. Support for Out to Lunch Acadiana comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette, located off Pinhook near Cali Saloon. Wyndham Garden Lafayette is pet friendly with free parking, free Wi-Fi, and a free shuttle within 3 miles that includes the airport and downtown restaurants. Additional support comes from ABiz Magazine and AcadianaBusiness.com, the essential information source for business decision makers throughout the One Acadiana region. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRVS 88.7 FM. I'm Aileen Bennett. On behalf of Peter Ricciuti, thanks for joining me. We'll be back here at Café Vermilionville next week. I'll hope you'll join us then for more business Acadiana style on Out to Lunch.
Major support for Out to Lunch Acadiana is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base, JonesWalker.com. Support also comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette.
Mullen. Please join me for From the Shamrock Shore, an hour of Irish traditional music from the 1920s to today, Thursday at 8 p.m. right here on KRVS 88.7 FM.
I'm Lee Klein, Peter, swinging it on a Friday night for KRVS's Big Band Swings. Plus, at no extra charge, we'll sway you with nice, slow ballads. It's a cornucopia of nostalgic sounds. Friday nights, 7 until 9. Plus, climb on board the Big Band Swings Express Wednesday night at 9 for a special one-hour repeat. All on public radio for Acadiana, KRVS in Lafayette Lake Charles. And you can stream our audio at krvs.org. Love to have you along for the Big Band Swings and other things wing-ding.
Howdy, partners. Buckle up and join me, Ranella Rose Champagne, Thursday nights at 11 p.m. for Lost in Love, where I'll play some of my favorite love-inspired country hits right here on KRVS 88.7 FM. I hope you'll join the fun.
Funkify your life. Rare grooves with roots in New Orleans and the greater Gulf Coast region. Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Friday nights at 9 here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and at krvs.org.
KRVS KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, at krvs.org.